How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 173 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. And now it kind of seems like somebody else is on every day of the week also. I got John Hamm again. I'm getting John Hamm all the time. You're just, you can't say no.
I can't. I literally cannot.
I don't know
how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's great for me. I can just text you and you seem to, what are you doing with your life that you're always free?
Oh, I'm busy all the time, man.
Yeah.
I'm constantly doing stuff. I've got flexibility in my life.
So you said something to me. Here's our text. I'm gonna embarrass you. I'm gonna read our texts.
Okay.
I said podcast all caps !! You're a regular now. Don't fight it. And you said, when do you want a pod? You immediately said yes, obviously. And then you said my afternoon looks pretty clear. I just got to work so I can goof off for the rest of the day, I suppose. What in the world does that mean?
That means I have a really good job, Fred. On the off chance that my boss is listening to this, I have an awesome job.
I wasn't going to warn you about reading that. I figured, you know what? I can always just like edit it out if you want me to edit it out. I'm going to see your real reaction to it.
No, I assume that every text I send is you can find it on Google. I assume that every bit of my personal information is out there in the internet somewhere. So,
well, now you really can find it out there.
Now you can.
Now it's really truly out there. What was your so we're recording this one Tuesday afternoon. I'm in Orlando right now. John, you're in Oklahoma City, recording this one at 2:00 Eastern time from Orlando, since I am the almighty recorder. What was your reaction to we didn't talk Westbrook last night, that 12 out of 14 in the final 3.5 minutes? What are you thinking as that goes on?
You know, it's cool because Jerry Ramsey and I, you know, the Zero Time podcast guest, Jerry Ramsey.
Yeah, of course.
We are at Deep Deuce Grill getting ready for the postgame show last night. And we're watching the game. And I mean, like, I suffered through that second quarter. And I would rather watch, like, a compilation of NFL gruesome injuries than watch that second quarter again.
That was so bad.
It was so awful. And so, yeah, we're going into the fourth, and Dallas is up 15. And, I mean, we're kind of kicking, you know, back and forth about, you know, the defense let him down, and this is a bad loss. And, you know, then all of a sudden, I mean, you can kind of tell when Russ – when, like, the switch flips with him.
Yeah, it's once he gets his 10th assist or 10th rebound.
and they're down 15. It's like, all right, it's me time. And you saw that happen, and – I've written about this before. You get in clutch time like that, and you could not rip the ball out of his hands with the jaws of life. And to Russ's credit, you know, he got 12 of those 14 points down the stretch in that 14-0 run. And, yeah, so our narrative completely flipped, like in the span of just minutes, thanks to that miraculous comeback.
Yep. He was – I think I tweeted this last night. He was – he's basically put on this earth to ruin deadline writing.
Yeah,
like that's his. That seems to be his sole purpose in life. With what he's doing in crunch time this year, it's crazy. It's unbelievable. Like, you got the Denver comeback, you got the Washington game, you got the Boston game,
Boston.
You got this one, yep. You got Utah a couple of times, probably a couple other ones I'm forgetting about off the top of my head. Like, there was Indiana, he hit the three, they lost in overtime, but he hit the three to tie it and had that great end of regulation. People forget about Washington because it was like, 20 games into the season, but like, he was terrible for the first 47 minutes and 52 seconds of the Washington game. Then he hit a three to send it to overtime, and then he had 14 in the overtime period. Like, what he's doing, the one in Denver was amazing. Like, what he's doing is, it's his best. People say there's not a lot around him. I got into a fight with basketball Twitter about this the other day. I don't agree with that. I think there are weapons.
I don't either.
I think he kind of chooses not to use those weapons at times. And, right. I don't understand why that's a controversial statement. He has the highest usage rate of all time. How is that a controversial statement that he chooses not to use those weapons at times and that they could be used more often than they currently are? But to me, just the best of all the MVP arguments for him, the best one that you can possibly make is not that he's averaging a triple-double, because I do agree to a degree that's a random combination of round numbers. To me, the best argument you can make is look at all of these games that they either could have lost or should have lost that they didn't, and it was purely because of this guy.
Yeah, no doubt. And look, I'm getting lit up on Twitter at the moment because I put forth the idea that my non-existent vote at this point would go to James Harden. And, you just talked about how people get awfully defensive if you bring up something that Westbrook is doing, even in the positive, that people interpret as a negative. But I've written about the clutch stats with Russ before. 5 minutes left in the game, score within 5 points. He's been a monster in clutch time situations, by that definition. Some people like to go and, rework that definition, but that is definitely, a huge feather in his cap. Absolutely. So I'm also with you that I don't think that, Russ has got 11 D-leaguers running alongside him. I think that narrative needs to kind of pipe down a little bit. What Russ has done to – I feel like if you replaced him with a good point guard, I don't know, maybe a George Hill, maybe a Jeff Teague – that type of guy, I feel like this Thunder team is probably 500. I feel like you have the Indiana Pacers.
Let's play a game.
Okay.
How many points? Obviously, Russell Westbrook leads the league in crunch time scoring per minute among qualifying players. How many points per 36 minutes is he averaging? Clutch time is games within 5 points with five or fewer minutes to go. How many points per 36 minutes is he averaging during clutch time this year?
Points per 36 minutes.
It's over 132 total minutes. How many points per 36?
I am really concerned about throwing out a ridiculously low number here.
I'm
going to say 78.
How many?
I'm going to say 78.
Oh, well, that's insane.
Okay. Well, now that I got your reaction, I'm going to say 42.
See, that would be an incredibly high number. If he were averaging 42, he would be second in the league in crunch time scoring. Wow. Isaiah Thomas is averaging 49.6, and Isaiah Thomas is second in the league because Russell Westbrook is first. 57.7 points per 36 minutes in crunch time. Is it crunch time or is it clutch time? I always forget. It's clutch time is the technical name.
Clutch is what it seems to be. Yes.
Yeah, during clutch time, 57.7 points per 36. Crazy.
It's insane. It is absolutely insane.
So that's the highest rate. The NBA.com database only goes back to 1996. That is the highest rate of the last 20 years. I'm rummaging around NBA.com right now, if you can't tell from my incredibly professional clicks that you might be hearing. his usage rate is 62% during clutch time.
Hence the jaws of life that I just described earlier.
Yes, 62%. That is also the highest figure of its kind in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
By far.
Right.
I mean, usually the number that leads the league is in the high 40s. So like James Harden's is along the lines. James Harden has the second highest usage rate in clutch time this year. 49.8%. And that actually would be one of the highest in years. Usually it's around 47, 48% is what leads the league.
Mm-hmm.
He's 62.
Yeah.
More than three in five possessions, more than that, is ending with the ball in his hands during clutch time for the Thunder. It's just crazy.
Yep. It absolutely is. And I mean, obviously, we're this far in the season, and teams can't exactly stop him by doing it. So there's – I don't know how sustainable, obviously, that is for Russ to have that high of a usage rate throughout the course of the game as well as in clutch time. But, you know, for this season, it is what it is. And I don't have a huge problem with it.
Want to hear my favorite, completely useless, completely meaningless piece of trivia from this season?
Sure.
Jeff Withey, among unqualified players, during clutch time, because I see this every time I look up Westbrook's clutch time stats, and I always think it's funny that it's never going to change. Jeff Withey came in earlier this year during clutch time. He literally played 1 second. I don't know the scenario, but he took two free throws, and he made both free throws.
Uh-huh.
He made one of two free throws. And Jeff Withey, now in clutch time on the season, is averaging 2,160 points per 36 minutes.
Totally sustainable.
And he's averaging 4,320 free throw attempts per 36 minutes.
Frankly, Utah needs to look at moving Rudy Gobert. That's what I'm taking away from that.
Yeah, although the Thunder had their way with Jeff Withey.
Yes. Yes, they did.
And I don't know if he's going to play clutch time again the rest of the year, but I hope he doesn't. Because when I was at Syracuse.
He shouldn't.
When I was at Syracuse, there was a guy, Ross DeLegro. And Ross, you know, I never actually fact-checked him on this. But he was a walk-on at Syracuse. He wasn't a walk-on anymore when I was there, just for my freshman year before I transferred to Mizzou. And mm-hmm. Ross always used to say he was the all-time leader in field goal percentage in the history of Syracuse University and the NCAA because he took one shot in his entire career and he made a layup. And he always used to say he was the all-time leader in NCAA history and Syracuse history in field goal percentage. And that's – Jeff Withey is doing the clutch time equivalent of that this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if he made both free throws.
Oh, man.
What a
– And then his PER would also be astronomically high and
that
all
guy,
sorts of good stuff.
That guy wouldn't have to pay for a drink in Utah for the rest of his life. And you know what? He wouldn't be able to pay for a drink in Utah after 1 a.m. for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a Utah bars closing joke.
Yes.
It's a hell of a joke.
It hasn't changed since the 90s. That used to get under Dennis Rodman's skin.
Really? I don't remember that, but I find that very easy to believe.
Yeah, I remember him complaining about that during one of the two finals, about having to play in Utah and all the bars closed up like at 6 in the evening or something. So,
you know, I actually like Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City gets grief. I like Salt Lake City. It's so pretty.
Oh, I want to go back there. I laid over there on the way to Vegas one time. And yeah, like you say, the view is incredible. I want to go back there and like spend actual time there.
It's just it's a stunning place. Like you can't believe that it's the same. Like it's just unbelievable that it's a place that people live. It's mm-hmm. so gorgeous. It's so, and I like it there just for. I don't know the city incredibly well. I've been to Park City a few times, but it's Park City is really nice. I really like it there. But I like it there. Gets a lot of grief. I don't get why. I like it there. There's good places to eat and it's beautiful. What more do you want?
Yeah. Well, it's,
I guess bars that close later than one. I guess bars
right.
that close later than one.
I guess.
Is what you want.
I guess. But yeah, it's a fellow small market. So, we tend to take our beatings from some of the, bigger city people. Not you necessarily, just others.
You think Billy Donovan is going to change up rotations at any point before the postseason? And do you think he's going to change them up during the postseason? Like, he's basically playing. I asked him pregame yesterday about his rotations. And he said that he thinks he's settled on a pretty consistent rotation. He just adjusts it a lot. And then I quipped to him, like, Billy, that's the opposite of a consistent rotation. And that's literally what a not consistent rotation is.
Right.
And he justified. I'm not knocking the adjustments. I think Billy Donovan's a good coach, and I think his best trait as a coach is his ability to find like lineups that work and just like pull them seemingly out of nowhere. They're not actually out of nowhere. They're just out of nowhere to like you and me because he sees things that we don't see. And I think his best trait as a coach is his ability to like find the small lineup that worked against Golden State in games 3 and 4 last year, you know, find the Adams Kanter lineups that work against San Antonio, that kind of stuff, you know? So I get that. And that's kind of what he was saying in the moment. And I was just kind of giving him grief in that sense, but he's playing 11 guys basically now. Hard to imagine that's going to be the case in the playoffs. And obviously who he plays in the playoffs and how he plays them in the playoffs is going to have a lot to do with just who they're playing against and where they are in the game and that kind of stuff, because they have a lot of guys who are specialists who would work against Houston but wouldn't work as well against Utah and vice versa and that kind of stuff. But do you see, like, Samaje Christen getting as many minutes come the postseason?
I hope not. So my original thought when they signed Norris Cole was that was going to put Christen back as the third-string point guard. Maybe they're trying to bring Cole along a little bit slower, and we'll reintroduce him in the postseason as the primary backup point guard. I could certainly see that. Because there's no shame in saying that I play matchups. You don't have to have an automatic rotation that at this minute mark, we always sub in this guy, and at this, you know, we always do this, and that's just the way we do it each and every game. Adjusting is fine. I encourage that. That worked out very well for the Thunder last season in the postseason. But Christen, I frankly don't understand why he's logging as many minutes as he has been. Playing alongside Russ in the backcourt, behind Russ. I just don't get it. So, you know, I defer to the guy who sees him every day in practice and maybe has a better view on this than me, but I don't quite understand it.
I'm surprised by it. I thought when they signed Norris Cole was going to be getting the minutes, but he didn't get much of a chance. At least game time, he didn't get much of a chance. He played about 3.5 games before Christen passed him in the rotation. That's been it. He has not been able to pass him since. And you know what? I don't think it's a case. And Billy has not disguised it as a case of Cole is still getting his feet wet and he's still learning stuff. First off, he's been in Oklahoma City nearly a month now. He signed on March 1st. It's March 28th when we're recording this. Like he's been with that team a month. Like he's been with them for a long, like more games than you have in preseason. Like he should be in the rotation if that were the case. And Billy is not disguised as that. I don't want to make it seem like he's disguised as that. He hasn't. On top of that, it's not like Westbrook is playing 35 minutes and then Christen is just getting the 13 as a backup. Like he played 20 minutes. He's playing alongside Westbrook. If Donovan were not particularly pleased with Christen, but he felt like he had to play him because, you know, he didn't want to play Cole because he just didn't think Cole was going to be able to contribute in whatever minutes he was going to get, he would just play Christen strictly as a backup point guard and that would be it. But that's not happening.
Yeah.
He's playing alongside Russ. I know they like his on-ball defense. And I get that. He's definitely a good on-ball defender. He fights really hard. He's long. He gets in guys' faces. He's super scrappy. Like he plays incredibly hard. No one is gonna knock that
sure.
He doesn't play hard. He plays incredibly hard, and he's athletic and he's long, and he's definitely a good on ball defender. He gets beat on the backside when he's guarding off the ball sometimes, but that's okay. He usually guards ones, so that's all right. But I wonder what's gonna happen with his minutes moving forward, just because I didn't necessarily see this coming when they signed Norris Cole. And I'm very curious. I don't know how it's going to progress, to be honest. I'm very curious to see how it's going to progress. I'm very curious to see how Taj Gibson's minutes are going to progress, too.
Mm-hmm.
Gibson hasn't played a ton.
No, he hasn't. And that's a guy that I feel like come the postseason. And certainly some of this is matchup-based as well. But, I mean, I feel like this guy should be getting 30s, you know, in the low 30s minutes-wise come playoff time. So, which reminds me, did anyone happen to ask Donovan about Sabonis last night?
Just getting the DMP?
Yeah.
No, because we don't do our jobs.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to cover because there was like a, you know, heroic comeback late in the game. I can understand why, you know, given the limited amount of time,
people wouldn't. I thought about it. Here's the reason. I know you know this, but to the listeners, sometimes people say, hey, why didn't you ask about so-and-so? And Sabonis is one of them. And I'm not saying it's not a legitimate question. It's totally a legitimate question. Asking about why didn't Sabonis play. That makes total sense. Especially when you're on the road. So I'll give you the mindset of a beat writer. It's easier to write your game story when you're at home than when you're on the road. And the reason why is because when you're on the road, Billy Donovan is standing up in front of what's that called? He's a scrum. He's up in front of like the Thunder logo and he's in a scrum. Right. And you have to stand up there and you have to hold your recorder and you have to talk to him. And you can't type and write during the post-game press conference. You can't write while you're waiting on him. You got to sit there. And so you're missing out about 15 minutes of writing time when you're on deadline. I have to get my story in by 10:30, which means I have to be done writing by at least 10:25 or 10:20. Late start, 7:30 start last night. You have a whole game story written because they've been down double digits the whole damn time. And then Russell ruins everything. So you got to write another 300 words in like 15 minutes. You're only concentrated on your game story at that moment. Like you are totally locked in. You've got this weird mentality where it's like you're writing an in-class essay, but they don't tell you exactly the topic of the in-class essay until the class is over. So you're like writing it during and you don't quite know what the final topic's going to be and you got to write it. The last thing you're thinking about for your story of that night, that's why you see these things as like next day questions. Like you see them at like next day practices and that kind of stuff, because it's just like after that game, like I could have put in a note of like, you know, Sabonis didn't play. Here's what it is. But I got to run back. I'm getting my question. I'm getting my answer. And then I am running back so that I can write immediately. And that's it, because I got to get my stuff in for print. And that's the life of a print journalist. So when people are like, why didn't you ask so-and-so? That's often a reason why.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, because like this particular thing would be like in the notes section of an article, if there was a notes section. Now, if like Steven Adams was a healthy, did not play, maybe that's a question that comes up because, you know, the guy is the starting center, you know, like a player of that importance, maybe you wedge that question in. But yeah, like you said, given the time constraints, given the situation, like you say, it's not always possible to get those questions in on game night. But I found it curious. I didn't know if this was Donovan just wanting to get a look at Jeremy Grant playing the four, if he wanted to get Collison a few minutes against Dirk, if Sabonis just, you know, if he saw something in the previous matchups against Dallas he didn't like with Sabonis. I was just kind of curious because I don't think it's an indictment of anything, you know, an indication of anything of what they're thinking. I just think it was a one-game thing, but kind of curious to see what they think about it.
No, it's definitely interesting. I'm with you. And that lineup he played down the stretch was interesting. I think that's the first time all year that he's played Taj Gibson at the five and Jeremy Grant at the four. And that lineup had some success defensively. You know, Nick Gallo asked Billy Donovan about that specific lineup combination if he was thinking about playing it at all pregame. And Billy kind of just like shook it off, because Billy's not going to like give away his hand. He's not going to be like, yeah, we're going to play that tonight. Billy, that's some bad coaching, Billy. just telling the opponent what you're doing. But Gallo asked him about it, and then he closed with that lineup. And Gallo, like, points at the court, and he's like, ah, he's doing it, he's doing it. And I was like, yeah. Nick Gallo, next Sam Presti. But you know, with Gibson, like, Gibson was a plus 27 last night.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessarily a mistake that he's not getting more minutes, because I think there are justifiable reasons for why they're not. And I think it's one of those things where, like, I don't believe in knocking someone if they eventually come upon the proper decision. Like, because when you're on the inside, like Billy Donovan is, there's other evidence that we don't have. And if he eventually comes upon this decision after weighing other options that we don't necessarily even know exist, or other, you know, more evidence that leads to other options that we don't know that evidence exists, maybe, like, that's fine. Like that's diligent, you know? So I'm not even necessarily knocking it, but I wonder what's going to happen in the playoffs. He's going to go three-man, big-man rotation, and they're just going to go Kanter and Adams and Gibson's minutes are going to be up. Do you know what the starting unit with Gibson in 10 games, do you know what their net rating is?
It's over 20, correct? Like a positive.
Yeah, they're outscoring the current starting lineup, so Westbrook, Oladipo, Robertson, Gibson, Adams. That lineup is outscoring opponents in 147 minutes. is outscoring opponents by 20.7 points per 100 possessions. Unbelievable.
That's wild. And it's only been one – what I mean, only one change. I mean, obviously Oladipo coming back and being healthier maybe kind of impacts that some. But we're talking about one starting lineup change.
Right. And to put that in perspective, like that one change is obviously Gibson over Sabonis. It's not like they were struggling. The starters were not struggling with Sabonis. They were a net positive. Mm-hmm. But if you swap out Gibson, put in Sabonis in like 600-some-odd minutes, obviously way more because they were doing that all season. But in 600-some-odd minutes, they were like a plus 2-point-something. Mm-hmm. With Gibson, they were plus 20.7. Now it's a decent amount of minutes, but it's over 10 games. So there's still a lot of noise in those numbers.
Right.
If you play that over a whole season, that number's coming down. But I am willing to believe, after watching that unit play, like that unit is really good. It's really good. It's not plus 20.7 good, but it's really good. It's really good. And I have a feeling, no matter who they play in the first round, I feel pretty confident that Billy is going to have that start. Like, he's not just going to play Gibson minutes. He's going to play Gibson with the starting unit a lot of minutes. And I think that's something that we're going to see because they gel really well. It works. Even with some of the issues, you know, Gibson doesn't shoot threes, or, you know, Robertson, you know, is a one way player or whatever it is, like that unit works well together.
Yeah. It's fascinating because, I mean, number one, you know, Gibson is hitting shots that maybe Sabonis was not hitting. And then two, I just think defensively, he just helps out as well. And that kind of brings me back to when we were talking about Kristen earlier. This just kind of, you know, when people look at why is Russ using the ball so much and why is Russ doing all this? I mean, granted, he can utilize some of these weapons a little bit more. He does have guys to work with, but there are so many defensive guys on this team. And that, I mean, that's an asset. That's kind of going against the waves there. But they've got a lot of defensive capable guys on this team that kind of lends itself to Russ being able to, you know, just go berserk like he does on a nightly basis.
We haven't even talked about Orlando. This comes out Wednesday morning. They're playing Orlando Wednesday night. We haven't even mentioned the Magic.
There's a good reason for that.
Victor Oladipo return game, which he didn't care to talk about last night. I asked him a question. Brett asked him a question. He just didn't want to talk about it. He just didn't seem interested, which is fine. That's cool.
Yeah.
But he just didn't seem to really, he just didn't really care. He was just like, yeah, you know, he was given the cliche, just another road game, which I never buy. I don't understand why it has to be sold like that. But, you know, if that's the mentality he needs to take, that's cool too. He's been shooting the ball well lately. I have a feeling he wasn't comfortable in Orlando. He wasn't mentally comfortable there. They never let him get comfortable. I don't think he was too thrilled with the organization in his 3 years with the Magic. That's really the only subplot for this game. The Magic are tanking. If the Thunder lose this game, I don't care that it's on the road. Like, this is a game they should win.
Absolutely. And it's one of those games that, again, my concern is that they're going to come out and say, oh, we don't have to work as hard. We can outscore them tonight. And then you know, someone from Orlando gets hot, and then suddenly DJ Augustine has his revenge game and drops 30 plus. This is a game that the Thunder should win very handily. Like you say, Orlando has basically packed it in, and just basically waiting until, you know, there's off-season changes for them. So I assume a lot of guys on that team have already got vacation plans, and they're just probably going through the motions at this point.
Oh, vacation plans. That sounds great.
Yeah, doesn't it?
It really does. All right, anything to plug? Anything to plug, as I always ask before we go?
Not much that I got going on, although strangely enough, here's an opportunity that I have this Thursday. A professor at the, I think it's a sports business class down at OU Norman, is inviting me to do a lecture on Thursday.
Wow.
So I'm going to go down and talk about the NBA salary cap and kind of how the league works financially. And I'm going to go talk about that too. I'm going to go shape the minds of some college students. So
wow, that's scary.
Yeah. Oh, in many ways.
Our future is doomed.
It's all on me now. Yeah, that's very frightening. So that's, I've got that coming up. So I should probably sit down and maybe whip up a quick PowerPoint or something. So,
Professor Ham.
I kind of like the sound of that.
Professor Ham.
Now that Andre Miller's not in the league anymore, I guess the name's up for grabs, right?
There you go. Professor Ham sounds like a cheap packaged, like a cheap packaged deli meat you would buy at like Homeland.
At Food and Stuff?
Yes, you buy 100% buy at Food and Stuff. That's a perfect way to end it. You're John M. Ham on Twitter. Ham is with two M's. And John is J-O-N.
Spelled the correct way, yes.
As always. And you can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. I'll be with you again after the Orlando game tomorrow night. You can, or tonight if you're listening to this on Wednesday, you can head onto iTunes, subscribe to Lockdown Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockdownthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road, my blog on the site, and you can see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow, wrapping up the Orlando game. I have a really early flight on Thursday morning, so in all likelihood, I'm going to be doing a short podcast wrapping up that Orlando game because it's rough out here, man. It's rough when you got the 6 a.m. flight and you get back to the hotel at 12:30, and like I got 50 minutes of sleep before my 6 a.m. flight this morning, so...
Gross.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough. The road life, the road trips are rough. So probably a short podcast tomorrow. Thanks, John, for coming on.
Thank you.
Until tomorrow, Locked on Thunder is locking up.